is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dave, for the introduction and welcome to the Christian War Room. We have got a very interesting subject today. Some people make a big point out of it. Some people say, you know, this is like the modern moral standard and we have to abide by it. Other people, you know, boast on not adopting this standard and not abiding by this standard. And it's a very sort of interesting thing. It's a little bit like the left-right divide, but the terminology they use is quite strange as well. What I'm talking about is political correctness, PC. What is PC and what isn't PC? Just to give you some horror stories we've had here in Britain, the rumors went round that in one of the councils, which was predominantly run by left-wing people, by the left, actually outlawed the use of white and black coffee. White and black coffee. You couldn't have a white, you could have a milky coffee, or you could have a coffee without milk, but you couldn't have a black coffee, because allegedly this was offensive to black people or to white people, and, you know, the term color as such can no longer be used in that context. To me, I mean, that is totally ridiculous, and I don't know whether this story is true. I wouldn't be surprised if it is true. To me, a memo like that is totally ridiculous. But we are facing an increasing amount people who choose to be offended, or sometimes not even the people themselves, you know, who are protected using this concept of PC, of political correctness. I mean, they don't care, but some people with a higher conscience, whatever you want to call it, or some very weird conscience, they come up with all these ideas of what is acceptable to say and what isn't. Yeah, and I take it one step further. I've been sort of in the world of education, and people sometimes say stuff which isn't, which isn't correct. It happens, you know, everybody. And if think everybody is listening. If I ask, you know, is there something you said in the spur of the moment and it is incorrect? And it wasn't right, yeah, whether it's ever happened to you. And I'm sure that, you know, 9 out of 10 people, you know, this is the case. You know, you've sometimes said something which, you know, wasn't maybe too good or could have been construed to be offensive. And again, in the world where I've been moving, people lost their jobs on account of that. They lost their jobs, they got into a disciplinary, and they were gone. And I don't know whether this is good or not. Yeah, I think sometimes it goes a little bit over the top, and people, again, are too afraid of offense, and they are too hesitant, yeah, to be offended. It's again, we're going to look at this today a little bit, and I think in the Christian War Room, it's affecting us. It's affecting Christianity as well, because words are gradually being changed, and the message, which and again, this is really the important thing. We don't care what the world looks like. We know the world is lost. We know that the world is in a very bad position. It is away from God. It is a very dark place. It is very confused, and it is lost. And within this world, we have got a message to bring. But the problem is, when people start changing words and they mess about with the meaning of words, which is happening with political correctness, and also where suddenly there's some indoctrination going on about this political correctness, about what is considered to be good and what is considered to be bad, it is affecting the church and it's affecting our outreach into this lost world. I mean, let me just put it down in a nutshell. People get born on this planet. Yeah, God loves them, but people are born in sin, and God is righteous. So that means that people are on their way into eternal separation from God, into eternal condemnation, into eternal hell. That is the description which we find in the Bible, to use this word, which is very unpopular these days and politically highly incorrect. And it is our job, yeah, to reach out to people in all this avalanche of information which is hammering on people day in, day out. We are just this small, tiny voice in the desert. In the desert of truth. There's very little truth and there's a lot of rubbish which is piped out. And we are just this tiny little voice in the desert saying, the desert of truth, saying, you know, listen, Jesus has got a way for you. You know, he has shed his blood for you and he wants you to be reconciled to God. All you have to do is just trust and believe in what Jesus Christ has done for you. Trust and believe in the shedding of his blood, that this blood has been shed for the forgiveness of your sins. And receive it for your life. That's really the message which we have. And obviously, then there's a lot, you know, coming to it. The New Testament, Old Testament, how it all fits together, the Christian life, the Christian walk, sanctification, you know, walking with your God, overcoming sin, overcoming the path of sin and walking in the path of righteousness. So all this stuff is sort of, coming with it. And that's what we are trying to get across as well. But that's the core of the message, and that's what we need to get out there. And it's muffled by so many means, by false religion, through cults, through Christian cults, through false Christians, through false brethren, through bad religion, through secularism, through lies like evolution and other things. You know, it's just going down. Anyway, we're going to go now into political correctness. And political correctness is the next big problem we are dealing with within the church, where words which we are using to describe the gospel are changed. Okay, there's one novel which I had to think of, and the novel is called 1984. Now, I was alive in 1984. It was 1 year after I got saved, and the book was quite popular in those days. But what he was describing in 1984 hasn't really happened in 1984. But when I sort of go, 40 years down the line, we can now actually see that this stuff is happening more and more. And also there's punishment as well. So if you don't use the correct language, there's punishment. To just give you a couple of examples, I was using the term brainstorming when I sort of had to work with my team. I was reprimanded by some young administrator to tell me that brainstorming is no longer politically correct because some people, who've got epileptic fits, it's like a storm in their brain and therefore it could be very offensive to them. And I'm kind of thinking, this is so far-fetched. You know, who's coming up with all this rubbish? You know, why should these people be offended if I use the term brainstorm, which has been used for, I don't know. I mean, how old was I at the time? I was in my 40s at the time when this discussion came up. And as long as I can remember, it's been used, a brainstorm session. Yeah. Crazy. Politically not correct. Yeah. I offend people if I use this term. I have to use another term. But anyway, this is sort of the type of thing where then words get twisted around. Okay, let me just look at George Orwell, and I'm going to read a text to you from 1984, and then we can draw a parallel to what's happening today. George Orwell's 1984 deals with a man by the name of Winston Smith, who is a member of the Outer Party. He works in the records department in the Ministry of Truth, and the job there is that he's rewriting and distorting history. Now, to escape Big Brother's tyranny at the least inside his own mind, Winston begins a diary, which is an act punishable by death. Winston is determined to remain human under inhuman circumstances. Yet telescreens are placed everywhere, in his home, in his cubicle at work, in the cafeteria where he eats, in the bathroom stalls. His every move is watched, no place is safe. On one day, while at the mandatory 2 minutes hate, Winston catches the eye of an inner party member, O'Brien, whom he believes to be an ally. He also catches the eye of a dark-haired girl from the fiction department, whom he believes is his enemy and wants him destroyed. A few days later, Julia, the dark-haired girl whom Winston believes to be against him, secretly hands him a note that reads, "I love you." Winston takes pains to meet her, and when they finally do, Julia draws up a complicated plan whereby they can be alone. And so that is a little romance in the film. Eventually, Vincent and Julia confess to O'Brien, whom they believe to be a member of the Brotherhood, an underground organization aimed at bringing down the party, the hatred of the party. O'Brien welcomes them into the Brotherhood with an array of questions and arranges for Winston to be given a copy of the book, the Underground's treasonous volume written by the leader, Emmanuel Goldstein, a former ally of Big Brother turned enemy. Winston gets the book at a war rally and takes it to secure the room where he reads. With Julia napping by his side, the two are disturbed through a noise behind the painting in the room and discover a telescreen. They are dragged away and separated. Winston finds himself inside the Ministry of Love, a kind of prison with no windows where he sits for days alone. Finally, O'Brien comes. Initially, Winston believes that O'Brien is also being caught, but he soon realizes that O'Brien is there to torture him and to break his spirit. The party have been aware of Winston's crimes all along. In fact, O'Brien has been watching Winston for the past 7 years. Finally, O'Brien takes Winston to room 101, the most dreaded room of all, the Ministry of Love, the place where prisoners meet their greatest fear. Winston's greatest fear is rats. O'Brien places over Winston's head a mask made of wire mesh and threatens to open the door to release rats in Winston's face. When Winston screams, "Do it to Julia," he relinquishes his last vestige of humanity. Winston is a changed man. He sits in the chestnut tree cafe watching the telescreens and agonizing over the results of the daily battles on the front lines. He has seen Julia again. She too is changed, seeming older and less attractive. She admits that she also betrayed him. In the end, there is no doubt Winston loves Big Brother. Okay, O'Brien spends the next few months, this is when he was torturing Winston, in order to change his way of thinking, to employ the concept of doublethink, or the ability to simultaneously hold two opposing ideas in one's mind and to believe in them both. Winston believes that the human mind must be free and to remain free, and one must be allowed to believe in an objective truth, such as 2 plus 2 is 4. O'Brien wants Winston to believe that 2 plus 2 equals 5, but Winston is resistant. There's some analysis about this book, and one of the things is the big thing which comes around is the Department of Newspeak, where words are deliberately changed and where the meaning of words are changed. And again, we find a lot of it today as well. It's quite interesting. Sort of when I look at this 1984 and sort of the totalitarian concept of 1984, I have to think a lot about what is happening today, that we are sort of gradually slipping back into some sort of totalitarian mindset where your mind is controlled. You're only allowed to think within a certain framework. You're only allowed to express yourself within a certain framework. So if you move outside this framework, you're in serious trouble. When you look, let me just look at the definition of political correctness. And initially, it's quite interesting as well. When I was doing some research, initially it was used, I think, even about 200 years ago when it sort of first came up in politics. And it, for example, the Nazis used the term political correctness if somebody was along the party line, and the same in socialism as well. It was used there as well to mention that, you know, somebody is following the party line. So it nothing to do with the types of words you use and so on. In modern days, the usage has slightly changed, and I've got a definition here, and it's the avoidance of forms of expression or action that are perceived to exclude, marginalize, or insult groups of people who are socially disadvantaged or discriminated against. Okay, let me just repeat this. The avoidance of forms of expression or action that are perceived to exclude, marginalize, or insult groups of people who are socially disadvantaged or discriminated against. Yeah. And the problem we have is that if you use a word or expression that defines a group, then you've got terms these days like microaggression or emotional rape, which is pretty much an insult. And then you've got total avoidance of certain words, which you cannot use anymore. And if you use them, you are considered to be a problem, you know, to the point of that you have to be dealt with the courts. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, we've got political correctness is or PC is a term used to language that seems intended to give the least amount of offense, especially when describing groups. Let me just go into this definition. Especially when describing groups identified by external markers such as race, gender, culture, or sexual orientation. The concept has been discussed, disputed, criticized, and satirized by commentators from across the political spectrum. The term has often been used to derisively to ridicule the notion that altering language usage can change the public perception and beliefs, as well as influence outcomes. Yeah. Okay. So again, the whole thing is supposed to be positive. It's a you know, the idea behind it is to avoid offense. Yeah. And that, you know, on the surface can be good, but it goes to an extreme where you know, everything has to be positive. Yeah. Okay, let me just look at some of these terms which are used, you know, for political correctness. So, for example, we've got this issue: if you address a person as male or female, and the person decides that he or she is non-binary, yeah, so neither man or woman, which is pretty much impossible, then you can be in trouble if you refuse to use the gender they describe, which I'm not, I think they've got a special word for that. They use it in Sweden. In Sweden, it's a big thing. And yeah, and then, for example, we've got this this campaigners here, and they're the transgender campaigners, and they condemn such phrases as, you know, born a man or born a woman. Yeah, and this is sort of to describe people who have gone through so-called sex change. Not that it's really possible, but anyway, that's what they try to make us believe. Even biologically male or biologically female are deemed problematic by the influential US gay rights media monitoring group GLAAD, which used to be called Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. So that's this organization. Because they oversimplify the complex subject of gender. We are told the correct usage is to say an individual is assigned or designated male or female at birth. Yeah. Again. My friends, when you go through this whole transgender thing, if you take a, and we know this, we've got this knowledge today, if you take a cell, there is either an X and an X chromosome, or there's an X and a Y chromosome, and that pretty much decides whether you're one or the other. There's one exception. There are people who have only got one X chromosome, and there are people who have got an XXY, and I think it's about 1 in 1,000. It's a very small figure, but they normally develop either one way or the other. So it's very rare that there, you know, are people who are identified as both male and female. Okay, what else have we got? We've got, it's interesting thing as well, I've got a list here, and it was in Daily Telegraph, and it's talking, is it, no, Daily Mail in the UK, a newspaper in the UK, and the article looks at the madness of political correctness and how it's sort of coming into our society. And we've got an issue here with dreadlocks. Yeah, dreadlocks is, you know, a hairstyle for African people who sometimes have them. I think the most popular person is probably Bob Marley with his dreadlocks, and some white people, they like it, and they go the same way. And it says here, use of this braided hairstyle by white people is set to represent cultural appropriation. When the designer Marc Jacobs was criticized for using a group of predominantly white models wearing dreadlocks in a show, he argued, not unreasonably, that this was similar to black women straightening their hair. This was further met with further outrage from mostly white commentators who complained that hair straightening had been forced upon the black community due to the beauty ideals based on white archetypes. Okay, so the story here is we've got white models having dreadlocks. I mean, personally, I don't like the hairstyle or whatever, but then again, who cares? But then people say, oh, this is kind of racist and all that, and it's all wrong. Yeah. And then the designer says, look, you know, it's the same thing. You know, black women straighten their hair. Why shouldn't white women, you know, wear dreadlocks? And then they said, oh, no, because, you know, the black community, they are just sort of following the white archetypes of white beauty ideals. It's whatever you do is not right. Whatever you do, people are offended by it. And that is pretty much where this whole madness of PC has gone into it. We've got another thing as well, you know, the whole FAT thing. It's unacceptable. FAT is an unacceptable term, which, according to the so-called FAT liberation activists, is used to shame people who might not fit the conventional beauty standards of our society. Contradictorily, though, anyone with a fuller figure is allowed to reclaim FAT as an empowering identity. So we've got the whole thing, you know, who is allowed to use the term FAT? Crazy, yeah. So some people get offended, then others say they don't want to go for that. Girls apparently is now a sexist word, according to Cardiff Metropolitan University, which said that it should never be used about adult women, as it is a way of belittling them. Recently I was called, I don't mind this stuff, yeah. I worked at a new place and somebody needed to get my attention, a colleague who happened to be a woman, and she called me new boy. Yeah. I'm not offended, just to make the point. She called me new boy, and should I be offended by this? You know, if I've got a bunch of women and I call them girls, is this so bad? Yeah, is this what these people are telling me? But this is sort of the way we are going, and where this sort of the direction it's all goes. Okay, now we've got the whole thing about hate speech. Let's see how much time we've got. We are slowly coming to an end about this politically correctness madness. Hate speech, okay? Any view that departs from social justice agenda is at risk of being seen as hate speech. We're talking about Britain now. The Home Secretary Amber Rudd's speech to last year's Tory party conference was reported to police as a hate crime by left-wing Oxford professor Joshua Silver. Okay, so again, politician, high-ranking politician in the British government. She made a speech at a Tory party. So Tory is like the party, Conservative Party. So she was amongst their own, obviously, so public. And again, it was declared to be a hate crime because she made some points which didn't fit within this, and he reported her to the police. Now, the problem is, at least in Britain, as soon as it's reported to the police, even if it's silly and ridiculous, they have to follow it up, and it very often can lead to a lot of convenience. And this is sort of the annoying thing. The police force is being cut down, and they are supposed to follow and pursue hate crime as opposed to real crime, you know, where people get beaten up or where people get threatened or stuff gets stolen and things like that. No, it's all about speech crime. No, the speech police comes, and if somebody says the wrong word, then we have to get him straight away. Okay, anyway, the speech which the academic later admitted he hadn't actually watched had included promises of tighter controls on immigration. Okay, so that's now a hate crime. Credulous police duly recorded Rudd's speech as a non-crime hate incident. Yeah, crazy. We've got another one as well, illegal. We've got illegal immigrants. Yeah. So, okay, if I migrate to a country, I can do it legally. Yeah, I get my passport, I go in there, I ask for a work visa, or I can just slip across the border and try to get a job. Yeah. Now, the term is illegal immigrants because it's not been legally followed through, yeah. And that term, again, is now harsh and racist and all the rest of it, and so we now have to call them undocumented immigrants. So that is the term. No longer illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants. And you can see what's happening here with the language, where language is used for changing things, changing the meaning of things. slowly. The next one is interesting as well. It's the whole gender change. Somebody went at a sex change operation, and somebody made the point that they could not claim to be real women since they did not have the experience of growing up female. And again, people went up the walls on this. Yeah. It's interesting as well when you look at the transgender thing. There was recently somebody who was a transgender person trying to get the job as a women representative at a university, and the feminist lobby went up the walls, yeah, for the same reason that this is a man claiming to be a woman. Yeah. It's interesting as well what's happening on the left, where the whole thing is going in such crazy circles that you know, the lion is eating his own tail. It's really interesting what's going on. Okay, we are running shortly out of time, and how many minutes have we got left? We've only got a few minutes left. Now, this is politically correct madness, and it's going to affect us all. So within Christianity, what we find is that we start having branches of Christianity who are just preaching a different gospel, and they're using the same terms. They talk about Jesus, they talk about love, they talk about righteousness, but they're preaching a different gospel. It's a gospel of no blood, a bloodless gospel. No blood is being shed. It's a gospel where hell doesn't exist. It's a gospel where truth is relative. When Jesus says that only he is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no one comes to God except through him, I would suggest to you that he really means it. But there's now a lot of it, especially in cultural Christian churches, where this is no longer seen to be the case. So they claim that, you know, God loves everybody, and you can meet God in Islam, in Buddhism, in Hinduism. You can meet God even in atheism. Yeah. I mean, even an atheist who does the right thing can go to hell. This is what the Pope says. And we are coming to a point where there's just a massive apostasy, and where words are being changed, where concepts are being changed, and where we are driven by political correctness within the church as well. And the God of tolerance and the God of the lowest common denominator is celebrated over and above the God of truth. And we need to follow the God of truth. Now, Jesus says of himself that he is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the truth. We need to meet Jesus, and we need to deal with him. We are in a real battle. I haven't seen this madness 20 years ago. I haven't seen it 40 years ago at all. And today, it's a real problem, because we are seen by this politically correct brigade to be bigots, to be haters, because we are not abiding by their idea. They cannot understand that I can love a Muslim, and I can love him like my brother, but at the same time, I have to tell him, because I love him, that he is wrong, that Muhammad is not going to get him into heaven. On the contrary, if he pursues his path, he's going to end up in hell. And so if I really genuinely love him, I have to give him the truth. I have to give him the truth, the way I understand it, the way it's been revealed to me. And what he does with it is his job. I cannot stand there, and I cannot endorse his faith in a false religion that is ultimately leading to his own destruction. And that is very important. We are running out of time here. Thank you for listening here in the Christian War Room. Tune in, and we're going to carry on the political correctness talk here at the Christian War Room. Thanks.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.